The Tom Woods Show, episode 1900.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, Tom Woods here. I am delighted to be joined once again by Michael Heiss, who created the Mises Caucus of the Libertarian Party. That, of course, is named after the economist Ludwig von Mises. And I'm going to have him describe for you what the Mises Caucus is all about. I'm sure a great many of you listening already know it. But what you're going to hear in this episode should make you happy. It's going to be a case of the good guys actually gaining steam, gaining momentum, and actually having victories. It's hard to digest that in a way, because as I said in a recent episode, I've just grown so accustomed to losing all the time that I'm not really sure how to compute actually winning. So we have stories of winning here in this episode. So we're going to do a little bit of a recap of what's been going on in recent weeks with the LP and with the Mises Caucus and the kind of gains that it's been seeing. But first, we'll talk about what the whole thing is all about. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Glad to be here.
All right, let's start off with a brief rundown of what the Mises Caucus is, and then we're going to talk about some very current events indeed.
Okay, so the Mises Caucus, the easy way to put it is this is a project where I am trying to reignite the Ron Paul revolution in the Libertarian Party. Obviously, you were a big part of that back in the day, Tom, and you understand the spirit and the feeling that came along with the energy that was present in the Ron Paul revolution and the culture that was present in it. You know, every time you went to a Ron Paul event, you've met a bunch of new best friends. We are trying to get that spirit back within the Libertarian Party, because if you could ever recreate that positive feedback loop that Ron had going on under the guise of an organization as opposed to a singular campaign, it never has to die the way a singular campaign does. So we are changing the messaging, changing the leadership where we have to, and basically trying to make the changes in the Libertarian Party necessary to be palatable to the liberty movement at large to finally enter the Libertarian Party. And it's been going very well.
It has indeed. So, of course, folks who've been listening regularly know from a recent episode about what happened in Nevada, where that couldn't have gone better if you tried. That was a clean sweep. And in that case, sometimes in these different state parties, you may be dealing with people who might not be fully on board with you, but their hearts are in the right place and they've been working for a long time and they believe in the message and they're hardcore and they're reliable on all the important issues. That is the opposite of what you were dealing with in Nevada. So it is, I think, not out of line for me to say that really, really bad people who were ruining the libertarian name were driven out, or absolutely driven out and repudiated in Nevada. Now, you're not going to get that kind of result every single time, certainly, but especially for a caucus that's not that old, to have that result even once is fairly impressive. Let's talk about what's been going on in other states that have had conventions so far. What has been the result, and what's it looked like, and has it been friendly or hostile or what, and what kind of success have you had?
Well, different states have different situations. You know, like you said, Nevada was a particularly hostile environment. There's a few other states that are unfortunately really hostile or even hateful, I would say, where the methods and tactics that we have to use there are a bit different. But then there's other states where, you know, we are integrated pretty easily with the state party and they are welcoming and they see that we're bringing in a whole bunch of new people. And they see that we're helping the state parties, that we're helping with issue coalitions, helping with local level candidates. I mean, that's our focus. If there's a political principle that we as the Mises Caucus are after, it's political decentralization. So that manifests itself in recruiting people, primarily local level offices and issue coalitions. So over the past, I would say 2 years, we've gotten to, it's got to be 20 states now where we've either become the chairs or we've become the majority of the board in these state parties.
So let's talk about some specific examples. Let's leave Pennsylvania to the end. And we don't need a whole lot of the inside baseball about who's who and whatever, but just give us an overview. Like, for example, New Hampshire. What was that like?
So New Hampshire, that was another one that was kind of hostile, but we did all but a sweep there as well. We took pretty much everything except for the chair. And that was a gesture of goodwill, frankly. They wanted to let the chair be a non-Mises person. But, you know, there was a pretty infamous situation that happened at the New Hampshire convention where the former chair, Nicholas Sarwark, which is where the culture of hostility really originated from. He was actually trying to become the secretary, the treasurer of the state party in New Hampshire. And he lost to none of the above, Noda. And one of our guys got that spot instead. And that sent a shockwave through the Libertarian Party, as well as the Liberty Movement, frankly, because a lot of people love to hate that guy, Nick Sarwark, I mean. So that was a really good success. I mean, we've had successes in Connecticut, New Jersey. Things look very well in Delaware. We just did very, very well in California. Idaho looks good. We took West Virginia, Oklahoma, Kentucky. Yeah, it's been pretty good. I don't know if I have them all at the top of my head, but it's got to be about 20 states. It's got to be about 20.
Well, can you explain, yeah, what exactly you mean by took? What does that look like?
So we either became the chair, like one of our people either became the chair in that state party, and or we became the majority of the board. And a lot of times we're becoming the majority of the board in these states. Oregon is another state that this just became the case in. And we, again, as a gesture of goodwill, we let somebody else become the chair and show that we're willing to work.
Okay. All right. Very good. So let's, if we may, can we just jump right into the thing we all want to talk about?
Yeah, sure. Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah, let's talk about the convention in Pennsylvania. Now, at this point, I'm afraid we may lose some people who think, oh, this is a lot of inside baseball about the inner workings of the Libertarian Party. I'm not interested in that. Oh, yes, you are.
It's juicy.
I don't care how little interest you may have in the Libertarian Party. You are going to be interested in this because this is a microcosm of all of society right here. What's going on there is just, oh, it just makes you crazy. But it really is a reflection of the state of society today. The kinds of fighting that went on there is a microcosm of just the whole of American society these days. And it's fascinating. And plus, it's a matter of good guys and bad guys. I mean, this really is good guys and bad guys. And if you're like me, you like the underdog to win, and especially when the underdog is a good guy. Well, the Mises Caucus really, in a way, is not the underdog. It really is the favorite these days. But people in power can find ways of, well, holding off the inevitable for the time being. And that may be what happened in Pennsylvania. But let's get into the details here, because I've had some people very upset that the Mises Caucus is trying to portray itself as having been wronged, when in fact the party had every right to do blah, 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 blah. Okay. All right. Well, let's hear what really happened and what the bird's eye overview of the situation is.
So let's give one piece of backstory that kind of sets the whole thing up that's really important to the whole thing. Now, again, we are the Ron Paul revolution taking over the Libertarian Party. So we're coming in, we're saying we got to change the messaging to inspire people. You know, we got to lead on ending the wars, sound money, end the Fed, end the lockdowns. We're very fiercely against identity politics, all of this kind of core stuff that we all agree on. So in the run-up to the convention, I offered to host some speakers at the Pennsylvania convention for free. And I offered to give them essentially Dave Smith, Scott Horton, and Michael Rechtenwald. Make a long story short, they came back and said that, you know, we don't want Dave and we don't want Rechtenwald. We'll take Scott though. And, you know, Scott and Dave are very good friends. I'm handling the booking for both of them. And I said, no, you know, like, no, it's you're not going to disrespect Dave and get Scott. Doesn't work that way. And, that was acceptable to them. So we did our own event. You know, we didn't complain. We didn't cry. We didn't try to tear down their convention. We just did our own event. And we made a membership drive out of it. So we hosted them ourselves. And as luck would have it, we were also able to get Jeff Dice, the president of the Mises Institute, to show up, as well as a few others. And so what we did is we made the event free for members of the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania. So or you could pay for tickets for $60, which is three times the price of the membership. So, you know, we took it on the chin to drive membership into the party. So we get to the convention, and Friday night is frankly the most energetic event I have ever seen in the Libertarian Party. There was over 320 people there. All of the seats were filled up. People were standing around the room. They were standing in the halls. You know, Scott Horton, a great foreign policy mind of the movement, you know, he got a hero's welcome when he came up. Dave Smith also got a hero's welcome when he gave a fantastic speech, you know, and in that speech really spoke to how we are willing to work with everybody. And we're not trying to just push people out. I mean, we're trying to win positions. We're trying to beat people for leadership positions, but that's no different than anything else that happens. you know, there's a narrative that is put out there by our opponents within the party or our competition within the party that that we're racist and we're transphobes and we're all the words. You know, you, I'm sure you know, Tom, you know, neo-Confederate and Nazi and all the words. You know, before it was racist, the 2021 stuff is more transphobe and anti-Semite. It comes and goes. But, you know, really spoke to how we actually are the ones that care most deeply about the issues that affect these different communities. And, you know, we're against the wars that are bombing all these brown people. We're against the drug wars that disproportionately affect inner city communities and all of this stuff, and spoke to all of that. And it was just a high, high energy event. Then we get into the convention itself. And essentially what's been going on here is there are some good people who have been, who have come into the party through the Joe Jorgensen campaign, who are, you know, ready to work, ready to help campaigns, ready to grow the party. And that's all good. However, their main contacts in the party have been the people that stand to lose. And the experience has been that the people who stand to lose are not embracing open and fair competition with us. Instead, are resorting to poisoning the well and using procedural trickery and stuff like that to beat us, thinking that we'll just quit. But we're of a very different culture than them. We don't quit. So what we walked into the next day was, before the convention even started, they were telling registered libertarians who were members of the state party that they could not be credentialed to vote in the convention. And that was at 8:30 in the morning. I mean, that was before I even had coffee. So, you know, we get to the convention and there is a rule on the books in the state party here where if you have not been a member for 180 days, 6 months, that you don't get a vote in the convention. However, there's a waiver to that rule. And if the people who have been here for 6 months vote, they will let the new members in. This has always, always passed in the past 35 years. This is the first year that it's ever been enforced on new members.
I'm sure that's just a coincidence, Michael, and you're just a whiner. That must be just a coincidence.
Well, look, I don't want to whine about it. I want to speak to what happened. You know, and then they sit there and they say, oh, you know, didn't you know the rules and blah, blah, blah. And you know what? All right, fine. Fair enough. It was in the rules to do that. That doesn't make it ethical.
Right.
And that doesn't make it fair, because the leadership was encouraging new people, assuring new people that they would have a vote. You know, there's one guy who gave a good friend of mine. He's actually one of the people in this first wave of the Mises graduate program. He's an attorney, very impressive guy. He has a bar where he hosted dinner for them on Friday night. Had a bunch of attendees there. He helped set up the event. He provided food for the event. He put, you know, a lot of resources into the event. He got cut off, even after making an impassioned plea of like, you know, you're sitting in the chairs that I helped set up for you to vote me out from. You know, you ate my food. And they still voted against it. And I'm of the opinion that they voted against it because there has been this poisoning of the people that came in through the Jorgensen campaign, that we're transphobes and this or that. And it was a hateful environment. I mean, our judicial committee chair, and the judicial committee is essentially the court system of the party. The chair of the court system of the party, more or less, was screaming, foaming at the mouth, F you, to new members. You know, another guy, another who is, I think, associated with the Socialist Caucus. Yes, there is a Socialist Caucus. You know, was saying, oh, that we're just a bunch of angry white men, which really angered a new Hispanic member. Like, what are you talking about?
And not to mention, by the way, we are the most fun people in the world. I have never seen more dour, depressing people than the kind of people we're up against. I mean, I look at them on Twitter, they're just never, ever seem happy about anything. Whereas you go into a room where we're having one of our events and it's charged and full of energy and cheering and laughter and smiles and a thirst for knowledge and a passion for justice. It's in the air.
Yeah.
Can you imagine going to a Scott Horton event and not being full of energy and passion? And, you know, I don't know. And it's crazy.
To that point, I've got another friend who is highly energetic. This guy, like, travels the state, sleeps in people's couches, and tries to get to every county convention he can get to. New guy, highly energetic. Everybody loves him. This dude is a Muslim that wears kilts. And he was at the hotel after the convention where all the people who just won were at. And what he said is that even after they won, they were still just so bitter and angry that he had to leave and come over to our event where Jeff Dice was speaking and Michael Rechtenwald were speaking, where we lost, to escape the negativity. you know, and all the good vibes were over with the losers. So, you know, that kind of just, these are not happy people. These are not people who, it doesn't seem to me that their primary motivation is actually the growth and the health of the party. It seems to me that their primary motivation is the control of the party.
Yeah.
Because if that was not the case, then they would have allowed, I mean, the number of people that they excluded is bigger than the people who were left voting. It was about 280 attendees, and we were left with 114 voters at the end of that. So they really whittled that list of people down. These people traveled the state. I mean, the majority of membership is in Philadelphia area. And they drove 4 or 5 hours. They got hotel rooms. They bought tickets. They did all kinds of stuff, only to be excluded for the first time ever.
So you told me that the vibe you were getting in there, which was quite palpable, was that you and people aligned with you are haters and transphobes and like whatever all that stuff is. And it's all a black legend. There's nothing to it. It's all BS. But they had all come to believe it because they're just listening to what they've been told.
Well, yeah.
They don't actually, they can't quote you. There's no words you've said. It's just, they just know it.
Well, think about it this way, Tom. These are people who are relatively new. They come into the party, they get integrated into the party, and then the leadership brings them up immediately. And you know, all they know is, oh, wow, you know, I just get involved and the leadership really seems to like me. And they get elevated by the leadership. But once that happens, that's when the poisoning starts. I've got people who are brand new members who have come to me and said, yeah, I talked to the vice chair and the first conversation I ever had with her, you know, she was saying, hey, that Mises caucus is trouble. Stay away from them. You know, like this is what's going on. And again, it all seems to be a power game for them. And another bit of context here is that Pennsylvania was not just about Pennsylvania. For the chair's race in 2020, we took 40% of the vote. Pennsylvania is the fourth largest delegation. We just did very well in California, which is the first largest. We did very well in Florida, which is the third largest. If we take the fourth largest delegation, then you know the game is over for our friend Angela McArdle, who is running for chair of the Libertarian National Committee next year. And I think they knew that. And there was a who's who of notorious haters from out of the state that were here. There was about 25 people from out of state who voted to bar new members in the state from coming.
All right. Now, is the thinking that, of course, we can't know what's going through their minds, but are they thinking that if we just hold off these upstarts, and of course, you guys are really evil. You want to be more clearly anti-war. You actually think the Libertarian Party ought to have something to say about the Federal Reserve System. There's a wild idea.
Or the lockdowns.
Or the lockdowns. There's a crazy idea that maybe that ought to be a priority. Here are your crazy, wild ideas that we can't possibly tolerate in the party. If we can just hold you off for a little while, probably you'll disband and go away. That is the most grotesque misdiagnosis of a situation I can think of in this year.
Well, here's my armchair psychology read of it. So again, a little story. That guy who I was describing that was yelling F you at new members, he actually won a seat on the judicial committee. Again, that's like the court system of the party, more or less. But then the big victory that we got is there's five people on that committee. We got three of them. Once our guys won, he quit. He didn't accept the position. They think that we'll quit because that's what they're prepared to do if they lose. That's what I think it is. They really think that if they just took this, and keep in mind, there's one other bit of context is after they won, they immediately tried to double their terms. They tried to double the amount of time that they stay in power, essentially. Now that failed, and that's going to be a big, big cost for them in the long run. But yeah, so they quit when they lose. Whereas, you know, we've been here for about 3.5 years. Frankly, we've lost more races than we've won. It's only really in the past year and a half where things have really started picking up and spiraling out of control for us. We've lost more races than we won, but we always come back stronger. We always have a party afterward and everybody's having a great time, even in the same hour that we lose. And it just speaks to our culture. And I don't think they understand the sense of purpose that we as a culture and a caucus have in what we're doing. We really do believe that it is a moral imperative that we win these city council seats and nullify the federal government and try to do something about the situation that's realistic and viable.
Well, by the way, one of the reasons we're able to have these parties and have all this energy is that our side actually has a very impressive slate of people. I mean, Michael Rechtenwald is a serious scholar. an ex-Marxist who's now turned libertarian, and they're not interested in that? How would you not be interested in that? What is wrong with you that you would not be? That never happens.
He was also given a hero's welcome, and that's his town.
Right.
That's why I wanted him in the first place. That's his town.
Right. So we have him. We have great communicators in this movement. We have great scholars. I mean, I can't imagine, and I'm not necessarily trying to take other people down here, but since they started it, you know, since they're the ones trying to prevent normal activity, which is, you know, joining the party, I will point out that there really aren't that many people on their side I would consult to say, gee, what do you think about what the Fed just did today? There's none of these people I would ask them that question. Or none of these people I would say, well, gee, what book have they written on, what important book have they written on such and such topic? Or what awards have any of their people won? Or anything? I mean, I don't see that they have any names of any significance at all, or that any of them could give a speech that would hold the attention of three people. So our side not only has the enthusiasm, frankly, we have an extremely talented group of people, which is why our people have big audiences. Like, I don't think on their side, I don't think they have a person with more than 5,000 Twitter followers on their whole side.
Yeah, it's a lot of young professionals and entrepreneurs that are getting involved in our side of things. And, you know, that's the kind of people who I think maybe know a thing or two about money, frankly, you know, like, but yeah, it's a very energetic crowd, very young crowd too. And I think that's kind of another thing here is that there's almost like a culture clash of like boomers and millennials, you know, because essentially I'm 32 now and I just turned 32 and it's like we're the Ron Paul movement that's grown up, you know, because a lot of us were 18, 19, 20 year olds when that was going on. And we carry that with us all this time. And we had to kind of find our way in life a little bit to figure out how we want to settle into this liberty thing. And a lot of these people, you know, went on to do something and they're coming back with that same energy and enthusiasm.
Yeah. Well, it's a thrill to be involved in it. It really is. And to see the strides you're making. And what it also shows is really that in place after place, you're dealing with a paper tiger, that these state parties were sitting ducks all this time. They're staffed by, not all of them, but the hostile ones, the ones who are actually hostile to the idea of having clear, consistent, hardcore messaging from the Libertarian Party, tend to be dominated by people who just want to have their own little fiefdom. Like, I'm the chair of something. You know, it is the worst personality trait imaginable. I'm the chair and I want to stay the chair. It's ridiculous. We actually are doing this because we care about ideas. We're not. I do these sorts of things pro bono, no speaking fee, whatever. I just go do them because I feel like doing them. I'm not getting rich doing this. I'm doing it because I want to spread the libertarian message. I'd like there to be fewer kids having their limbs blown off. You know, things like that. And I would like the Libertarian Party to be front and center on things like that. You know, there's my wild and crazy proposal for the Libertarian Party.
Radical idea.
But it goes to show how many of these, really, there's no energy there. There's no enthusiasm. That all it takes is a group of people who really, really are passionately moved by the kinds of ideas that Ron Paul, which is a name that they can barely utter, because, of course, they're superior to Ron Paul. These losers, you know, whose entire life accomplishment is, you know, they play Dungeons and Dragons or something. You know, they can't even bear to utter the name Ron Paul, but the rest of us actually read books. You know, like we read Ludwig von Mises. We read the books that Ron Paul recommends. We want to bring these ideas in. Well, that's all it takes in place after place after place to replace a group of people who have accomplished nothing, who like to talk about how their messaging is going to resonate with people more than our radical messaging. Yeah, well, how's that been working out? So number one, they don't succeed and they don't spread libertarian ideas. So, I mean, you almost have to take your hat off to that kind of lack of success. Absolutely nothing of any kind. Well, gee, it turns out it's not that difficult. If we band together and are determined to do this, it can be done. Now, before we talk about the event in Virginia later this year, 2021, let's talk about Pennsylvania 2022. Now, yes, they bought themselves a reprieve. But since their entire platform is keep our people in power for the sake of keeping them in power, and our platform is bring libertarianism to the Libertarian Party, I know where my money is.
Yeah.
I want to do something about this, and I know you do too. So tell me what your plan is.
Well, their platform is to stop us. Like, that's the biggest victory that they can claim, is stopping us. You know what I mean? Like, the biggest victory that they can claim is stopping the Mises Caucus, not winning, you know, a House seat or something. It's stopping the Mises Caucus.
Yeah.
So yeah, they already have their dates for the next convention. It's March 4th to the 6th in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. It's at the Best Western Genetti Hotel. And I plan on bringing some folks out again. And, you know, I'll put...
All right. Well, hang on. But before you go on, I don't know where that is. So tell people, what is that close to?
It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It's
that's not what I want to hear. Where do I fly into to go to that?
You're going to fly into Harrisburg.
Okay.
You're going to fly into Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And, you know, we're going to do the whole thing again. We're going to have speakers. We're going to have a lot of energy, a big audience. We already had about 320 at this one. And our email list and contact list is only going to get bigger. And, you know, I'm going to put the offer out to them once I get all these commitments shored up and say, hey, these people are coming. Whether you want to accept them at your convention or not, it's on you. You tell me. I suspect, I'll call it now, I suspect that they won't let them. And we'll have to do a side event and bring as many people out as possible to make right on this.
All right. Well, I'll be there. I'm coming. And I want my folks to make the effort. If you can possibly swing it, we're going to show up and try and get some big numbers, despite the fact that it'd be nice if it was in Pittsburgh, you know, a nice, simple, easy place to get to. But who cares, right? We rise to challenges. Remember back in, this is before Michael Heiss's time, he's such a young pup. But in 2008, when Ron Paul decided that he was going to have his own little convention at the same time as the GOP convention nominating John McCain, and it was in the Twin Cities. So the GOP convention was in St. Paul, and so we had our own event, the Rally for the Republic, simultaneously in Minneapolis. Now, that was even more difficult because the GOP convention meant that all the hotel space had been long gone for months. All the rental cars, long gone. How is Ron Paul going to put on an event in the Target Center that holds 15,000 people? Where are they going to stay? How are they going to get there? And yet it happened. You watch his speech on YouTube, that place is packed. You couldn't fit one extra person in there. And we did it because we shared floor space. We welcomed people into our homes. Logistically, we made it happen. And on something like this, we need to show up and bring our numbers. I'm doing it. Now, I like to travel. I really like to travel. And so when I have time available to travel, I like to go and see sights. Okay? I don't immediately think I want to go to the dead center of Pennsylvania. I'm doing this, not for any money. I'm doing this because it's the right thing to do. And we need to not just send a message. We need to take action and make things happen. So I am on board for this. And whoever else you bring on board, in terms of speakers or people who are going to rally folks, the more the better.
Well, I can tell you that if you're going to go ahead out and say that you're coming, I will say that Dave Smith has also committed to coming. And we have a third person in mind that I won't say that we haven't shored up the commitment from yet. But I think if they sign on, it's going to generate a lot of excitement. So what people need to do right now, though, is go to lppa.org and join, even if you're not in the state, even if you're not in the state. It's actually easier to be a voting member if you're not in the state than if you are in the state, ironically enough. So you want to go to lppa.org and join the party for 20 smackers.
Okay, I'm going to put that link on the show notes page also. This is easy to remember because it's tomwoods.com/1900. You've joined me for a nice round number. Not quite 2,000, but 1,900 ain't too shabby. So I'll put that link there also. And I'll also have a link to the Mises Caucus website if you want to learn more about them. So that's one thing. That's coming up March of next year. You have another event coming up sooner than that. Let's talk about that one.
So that's October 2nd. That's going to be in Fairfax, Virginia. This is the pilot program for what we're calling the Take Human Action Tour. Take Human Action is our tagline for a lot of things. And the Take Human Action Tour is essentially our pilot for our campus outreach and recruitment program. Originally, it was supposed to be held at the campus of George Mason University, but, you know, COVID, occupancy, you know, we had to work other arrangements. So we're at a hotel very close by. There's going to be shuttles from the university to the hotel, and you will be there. I believe you said you're going to be talking about secession, if I remember.
You know, that's because you wanted me to talk about some crazy thing. And I thought, well, it's kind of a crazy thing, even though it's the most humane solution to what ails us right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's what's needed. And it may come to pass too. But so, you know, you'll be there. Maj Toure will be there to talk about gun control and gun safety. Michael Bolden will be there to talk about nullification. Michael Rechtenwald will again be there. Sean Rittenauer, of course, from the Mises Institute, will be there to talk about Austrian economics. And it's basically a half day of lectures to students that give a crash course on unique topics that are also of particular interest to us as the Mises Caucus, to try to bring these young folks in and get them work in the decentralist program with us.
Excellent. Now, do you have a link up for that event that I can send people to?
Yes, it's lpmisescaucus.com/tour.
Okay, that's easy enough. All right, so I'll put that on the show notes page. I mean, really, folks, you just need to go to tomwoods.com/1900 if you know what's good for you, because it's all there.
It's free to attend. The lecture series is free to attend, and then there will be an after party in the same location with comedy from Dave Smith and Robbie the Fire Bernstein from the Part of the Problem podcast. That will be a paid event, you know, but it'll also be a very fun event. You know, you got a whole day of intellectualism and talks and Q&A and all of that. And then you can cut loose and have some drinks and hang out with, you know, the best liberty minds in the movement.
All right. Well, that is going to be a blast, too. So make sure to attend one or both of those. But I'm telling you, that Pennsylvania one, that just sticks in the old craw. So we got to go do something.
Everyone loves a revenge story.
Yeah. Well, I don't like being underestimated by somebody, you know, so we got to bring our army with us and just make sanity prevail. I know they think it's some kind of, or they don't actually, they're not that stupid. They don't actually think that we're fascists taking over the libertarian. I mean, really, we believe in the non-aggression principle more than they do. Okay. So I don't actually believe that they're that stupid, but yeah, we're going to show up and we're going to make sure libertarianism is represented in the Libertarian Party. It's just, again, wild and crazy philosophy that we have. And remember what Ron Paul said. First, he said the Mises Caucus is the libertarian wing of the Libertarian Party. And he says that we have a job ahead of us and we have got to carry out that important task. Any parting words, Michael Heiss, before we wrap up for today?
Well, if you like what you hear, you can become a donor to the Mises PAC. I forgot to mention that. We actually have our own PAC. And we're making close to $14,000 a month, which, trust me, by Libertarian Party standards is phenomenal. I made a joke at the end of your last podcast where I said that I haven't actually evolved to my ultimate form yet. And I am happy to report that I am now starting to evolve into my ultimate form. This is about to become my full-time job June 1st. So that's something I'm extremely proud of, something I'm extremely excited for. It's going to be a huge life change for me, a very meaningful life change for me. I couldn't be more excited for that. So if you like the program that I'm talking about, recruiting people, focusing on city council races, arming those city council people with nullification legislation, and working on issue coalitions. You know, if you have a blue town, working with them on Breonna's Law, working with them on drug decriminalization legislation, or if you're on the right, you know, or if your town is a red town, you know, having a Second Amendment sanctuary ordinance in your town, or working on a tax relief, well, I guess that wouldn't be an ordinance, but a tax cut in your town, that's what we do. We do issue coalitions, which is something Ron talked a lot about, and we are all about decentralizing the government. The power of the state back as close to the individual as possible, which realistically is probably the town level. So takehumanaction.com. You can become a recurring donor for as little as $5 a month.
All right. Excellent. So check that all out. I'll have all the links to everything we talked about, including the events, at tomwoods.com/1900. Thank you, Michael Heiss, for your service, my friend.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay, everybody. Before we wrap up for today, I have a very, very talented listener who has just established Sorbie Group, S-O-R-B-I-E Group. He's an MBA and former Big Four management consultant, and he struck out on his own in 2020 to deliver the kind of strategic analysis and insights that he used to, but this time to the world's entrepreneurs and small businesses. So they deliver services in the following areas: strategy consulting, business plans, financial analysis and pro forma financial models, pricing strategy, custom models, and dashboards. They have experience in a broad range of industries and geographies: e-commerce, cryptocurrency, healthcare, bars and restaurants, software and emerging technologies, luxury goods, subscription services, etc. Their methods allow them to get up to speed on any business model quickly and develop a compelling strategic case. Their work has been used both internally to help business owners plan, strategize, and forecast, and externally to seek investments, loans, and grants. So the website is sorbigroup.com. That's S-O-R-B-I-E, sorbigroup.com. You can reach out there or email for more information at info@sorbigroup.com. Any Tom Woods Show listener who reaches out and mentions the Tom Woods Show will get a 10% discount. So check out sorbigroup.com. And if you would like publicity for that website you're thinking of creating, all you got to do is get your hosting through my link, and I'll give you other benefits too that will get you a nice head start out of the gate. Doesn't cost you a single additional cent. These are free bonuses. Find out about them at tomwoods.com/publicity. American history is our topic tomorrow. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.